Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome for a second time today a marketing guru, person who's been referred to as the father of modern branding, Mr. David Acker from California, USA. David, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Mr. Acker is the vice chairman of Profit Brand Strategy. He's an executive advisor to Dentsu Inc. Philip Kotler once called him, as I said a little while earlier, the father of modern branding. He's written several books, 16 at last count, or maybe 17, and has hundreds of published articles in prestigious journals. His latest book, The Future of Purpose-Driven Branding, is what we're going to talk about today. And just before we started recording, he said he has published an edition for India, which has examples from India. So David, thank you again for agreeing to speak to me. Let me start by talking to you about your book. How do you define purpose-driven branding in the context of your book?
Well, I think that people are recognizing that employees, especially younger ones, want a higher purpose. There's this old story about this architect in the 15th century was building a cathedral, and walking down the steps, he asked, "What are you doing?" And the guy said, I'm laying bricks, and I'm really good at it. And then he walked on, and he asked the next person, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm building a wall." And then he asked the third person, who said, "I'm building a cathedral." Well, people want to build cathedrals. They want relationships with companies that are building cathedrals, and not just trying to make sales and profits. So we like to see a higher purpose. And one type of higher purpose is what I call a social purpose. And that means that you have within your sort of goals and objectives and culture and strategy, an interest in helping society, whether it be climate change or inequality or personal health or whatever. And sometimes a business purpose can have an umbrella that'll cover the business and the social activities.
Right.
But sometimes you need two. Sometimes you need a business purpose and a social purpose. But anyway, within a social purpose, branding plays such a key role.
Right.
Because branding is, first of all, if you have a program that's going to have impact, it needs a brand. Without a brand, it's hard to communicate.
Right.
And that's what brands do. But secondly, this brand, the social purpose, can impact the business. It can a business its relationship to employees, to customers, to investors. And so it impacts the business brand. So that's kind of what branding in the future of branding in purpose-driven businesses is, the fact that you have to learn to brand the social effort, and you have to learn to attach the social effort to the business.
Very interesting. And David, what are the long-term business benefits of investing in purpose-driven initiatives?
Well, the if you look at the literature, Michael Porter and a colleague wrote a famous article in 1911 in which he said that in the new economy, a business has to receive, a business value from its work on social efforts. And they talked about how you would slant your business to do that and to make your offering more environmental, your packaging and so on. But if you don't make windmills, it's really hard to say that that's the avenue to get value from the social purpose. But the reality is that 95% of the companies can't really do that. If you make beer or something, you can't really do that. But what you can do is to have the social program provide energy to your business, provide an image lift to your business, to provide engagement to your business from customers and employees and others. And these are sort of the three pillars of brands, or brand equity, the three pillars of brand equity, but they're also the necessary driving force to any successful growth strategy. You need those things. And if you stop and think about it, most businesses find it very expensive and even impossible. I mean, if you make a bar soap, or if you make refrigerators or something, you can talk about your products and nobody cares. Nobody will listen.
Right.
And even if they're listening, they're skeptical. So this is a vehicle to gain for your business the three most important elements of that will underlie a successful strategy that you are probably unable to do it any other way.
Well said. Thank you. Great response. But my other question, David, therefore, is that since you say social programs have become so crucial, what are the drivers for this? Is it the young consumer, the millennial customers, and the Gen Z who are now demanding this from brands?
I think there's some of that. There's some customers that look favorably on choices that come from a company that has an environmental angle to it. But there's a couple of realities. First of all, that segment can be kind of small. Now, even if it's only 10%, 15%, that's the difference between breaking even and making a lot of money.
Right.
So it's not that it's not important, even if it's small. But the second thing is that, you know, that's not really the way to view your social program. I don't think you should view your social program entirely at that it'll create a strong connection for you. What it does is give you energy and visibility.
Right.
It gives you an image lift, so people feel good about you. And it may not be decisive in their decision making, but it might solidify their loyalty. And it gets engagement. And the engagement is really the ultimate in creating brand loyalty and real connectedness. So if you can develop a social program that can do that, then you know, it's just incredible. And I can give you a couple of examples. One is the Dove, the brand Dove. Would in 2003 they had they kind of needed a new thrust because their moisturizer appeal wasn't working so much because their patent ran out. Others could do it. And they were making products like deodorant that it didn't matter if it was moisturizer or not. So they needed a new way to come to market. And they came across the idea that only 3% of the women in the world think they're beautiful. And there's this big overhang that everybody has to be young and thin to be beautiful. And so they said they're going to talk about real beauty. So they started a program that was about real beauty, and they every year they would come out with this amazing set of studies that showed women that no, you didn't have to be you didn't have to have sacrificed self-esteem because you are beautiful. And even if you're older, even if you're not thin. And they did one program in one experiment where they had a person that would draw a picture of a woman based on her self-description.
Right.
He didn't see the woman, just looked at herself. And then he did the same exercise, but with a stranger that was describing the same woman. And the stranger's portrayal was much more attractive than the self-description. And they had a tagline, "You're more beautiful than you think." And they got something, they got $150 million worth of free exposure because everybody sort of gravitated toward that. It became the most viral ad ever. And this is just one of a dozen of programs they've had over the last 20 years. And during that period, the sales of Dove has gone from 2.6 billion to over 6 billion.
Wow.
I mean, and it's all on the driven by the Real Beauty train. And because there's nothing else that you can use to explain that market success.
Fascinating.
So anyway, that just gives you a pretty vivid thing of the potential this has. You can, and Dove makes soap, right? Deodorant. You can't get excited about that.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said. But my follow-up question to that, David, then, is that how can purpose-driven branding help in crisis management and recovery?
Well, when somebody has a crisis and they come to me, I always say the same thing. I say that, okay, you might have to try to clarify what happened or something, and you need to fix it fast. But what you really need to do is to change the conversation.
Right.
You need to change the conversation. So how do you do that? How do you do that if you're a bank? Barclays Bank at one point was the least trusted brand in the least trusted industry in all of United Kingdom.
Right.
And they tried everything. It was a aftermath of the 2008 financial meltdown, where they got blamed. It had to do with LIBOR, which is the interest rate and so on. But they got blamed. It was, they thought they were partly responsible more than any other bank. And they had all these terrible articles would come out and everything. And their trust was in the toilet. And trust is important for a bank. So they developed a social purpose. And it was about helping people be at their best or best potential or something like that. And they sent their employees out to create social programs. And 40 were created, and one of them was called Digital Eagles. And people at the bank, there was 12 of them to begin with, would go out and see people that needed help to thrive in the digital age, elderly people, for example, kids, and they gave all kinds of online courses. They had teach and learn sessions in their banks in Saturday mornings. They would make house calls and help people, and they created three stories out of these this early Digital Eagles efforts, and they put these stories out there, and they were emotional stories. You really got to see, you learned to know these people. There was one that was Steve Rich. He was a walking soccer player because he had injured himself. He could no longer play running soccer. And he was really into it, and he wanted to develop a website to further the sport, to connect companies with teams, and to organize tournaments and so on. And the Digital Eagles helped him do that. And they made a video. You got to know his wife, his grandson, his mates, and see what this did to this. It changed his life. And after they put out these videos, trust went up 40%, and consideration went up 130% or something, and they got 4,000 positive press mentions. I mean, it was a whole new world for them, and they were able to turn the corner on a real crisis that they just couldn't any other way.
Wow, fascinating. And since you gave me the example of Barclays and their campaign on digital, it's an interesting segue to my next question. How can technology enhance the implementation and impact of purpose-driven programs?
Well, first of all, if you are in a position to make electric cars or windmills or temperature gauges or temperature control system for houses, This technology gives you an opportunity to really do some disruptive innovation that has as its cornerstone the environment or other, or addressing the environment or other social problems. So that's one thing. And it's really quite remarkable if you look at what people are doing about packaging or controlling the temperature in the home or something. The new technology has done amazing stuff. And you know, serving people that are blind or disabled or something, they can build machines now that they couldn't before. So technology has a lot to do with coming out with products that will have a higher purpose and serve a higher purpose. But it also, with these, the idea that you create a signature program that's branded and will create energy, image lift, and engagement, that too is affected because things like the social media and so forth can play a big role in how this can see the light of day and to really communicate and connect, which is the cornerstone of a successful signature program that will enhance a business. That it has to connect and communicate.
Well said. And David, what role does leadership play in driving a purpose-driven branding strategy?
Well, what we want to do is to create these signature programs that are embedded in the strategy of a business. You know, like the Dove Real Beauty, it's integrally part of the business. Nobody's going to say at the year, you know, we're spending a lot of months on this do-gooder Real Beauty program. Maybe we have to cut back and you know, sell soap again. And nobody's going to say that. That would be idiotic, right? Mm. Because it's integrated into the strategy, but also it's integrated into the culture, because you have to have a culture that believes on this, that's in it for a long-term commitment, that has passion, that really gets involved as a thought leader in this area. And that's what Dove has done with Real Beauty and their selves in their sister programs on self-esteem. But so you really have to, and that kind of, it starts with the CEO, doesn't it? The culture and the strategy. Right. If you don't have the CEO on board, and you know, we've got at Unilever now a very concerning phenomenon when a new CEO has come in and doesn't seem to have the same passion about social programs and doesn't have the same understanding about the good that social programs can do to Dove and other Unilever brands. And so it's disturbing that we might see Unilever step back from its leadership position.
Amazing
at the CEO level.
Amazing. And therefore, a follow-up question is, how can companies ensure their purpose-driven branding is authentic and not just tokenism?
Well, that's a really good question. And it's especially good for somebody like me that's advocating justifying a social program on the basis that will help a business. So how do you prevent people from saying, you're just in this to help the business, when in fact you're in it to help a business? So the answer is that you have to have a long-term commitment. You have to have real passion. You have to demonstrate that you have enough interest in this area to be a thought leader, that you're not just donating money to a cause. You are really involved. You have to demonstrate your employees are engaged, hopefully your customer engaged. You know, Thrivent is a financial services company, a major one in America. And they, about 20 years ago, adopted as their signature program Habitat for Humanity, that that builds homes or refurbishes homes for those in need of housing. And they have, in this 20 years, they've had something like over 6 million hours of volunteering coming from their employees and their customers. Their customers form member communities that are locally structured. And these people are organized to do social good. And about half the social good is working for Habitat Humanity. every one of their 2 million customers knows about their relationship to habitat and how important that is to thriving. It's not just something, well, let's donate here this year and donate there next year and volunteer here this year and volunteer next year and have some energy goals. It's a real commitment. Nobody accuses Thrivent of tokenism or of just in it for, you know, to create more interest in their financial services. And incidentally, building homes has nothing to do with financial services, nothing.
Correct.
So it's not the fact that you always have to have something that fits hand in glove with your assets and your offerings.
Very well said. So David, I have time for two more questions. My next question is that how do sustainability and ethical considerations play into purpose-driven branding?
By sustainability, do you mean environmental stuff or do you mean something broader?
No, the environmental stuff that most brands and companies are now talking about.
Okay. Well, first of all, the ethical dimension. I mean, every company needs to be ethical.
Correct.
I don't think you get any credit for being ethical.
Absolutely.
And in this ethical stuff, I think, comes from ESG, which I think is I'm not a big fan of ESG. It's like 100 dimensions, and they got a lot of dimensions that aren't relevant to any company. You know, what percent of your board is minority or something like that? And you know, if you look at the Dove Real Beauty program, which is probably the most successful social program of all time, they've really changed the life of hundreds of millions of women and girls.
Right.
I mean, and they've built this business. And if you look at ESG, how would this be reflected in ESG? Well, some dimension number 49 has three parts, and one of the parts would be where you fit in this.
Yes.
So I'm and ESG is, you know, I don't know what percentage, but a part of it is you know, being honest and ethical. Well, it in my mind, it has got nothing to do with impacting the world or with impacting your business. So that's what I think about ethical stuff. But with respect to environment, environment, it turns out, is really hard to create signature social branded programs because it's usually based on environmental or energy objectives, which are addressed through hundreds of programs throughout the company. We'll change light bulbs. We'll make our trucks drive more efficiently to save energy. We'll buy electric trucks, and it's hard to brand those programs. And so it energy tends to be pretty diffuse. So as a result, you're much more likely to get a social program than you are in an energy program to carry the flag to do this. Now, if you're somebody like Patagonia, they have a branded program, Warnwear, where they buy in things. They have a program called 1% for the Planet, which they've got people to sign on to. And so they've got some branded programs, but that's Patagonia. And in most companies are really focusing on energy reduction, and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to turn that into a branded program, it turns out.
Yeah, very well said. Thank you. Great response. David, my last question to you, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. A lot of them are small businessmen or startup entrepreneurs. How can small businesses effectively engage in purpose-driven branding?
Well, I think it just depends on the founders at the start and in which direction they want to go. I think that it's helpful in terms of making employees feel good, wanting to work there and so on. It's helpful to have a social program, and as I say, it's a way to get energy, visibility, and engagement that it's pretty hard for a small company to get any other way. Salesforce is one of the most impressive social program developers and social purpose companies that we've ever seen. And Salesforce started in 1999. And they were sitting there with three people in an apartment, and they decided they were going to do this 1% program. They were going to give 1% of their equity, 1% of their sales, 1% of their employees' time, 1% of the product usage was going to go to social product. They were nothing. They were three people. They had some a small amount of funding, and they started right at that moment.
Amazing.
So you don't have to wait until you're large to do that.
Very well said. David, on that note, and this absolutely incredible conversation that I've had with you on purpose-driven branding, thank you so much for speaking to me about purpose-driven branding, your three words, energy, visibility, and engagement. I think will reverberate through all the viewers as they listen to our conversation. Thank you for speaking to me about so many different aspects of purpose-driven branding, some of the signature programs, and how purpose-driven branding can and will impact businesses and brands. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.